Raised Rowdy.
All right, everybody, let's begin the podcast by saying that you are welcome to join us at the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nick Tressler.
And we got Austin Snell on the pod. Welcome back, brother.
Good to be back, man. Let's crack these things open.
Right. Yeah, cheers. We had our first podcast today at like 10, and we didn't even have them in front of us. And then we got them out just in case on the because we did three today on the last one. And I was like, I bet you we'll do it on this last
one. Why not?
It's afternoon enough, you know?
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah.
Good to see you, brother.
Good to see y'all, man. Been a little bit.
I know. It's been a while. That's what we were chatting before the pod of, like, when did we have you in last? Because I know Matt, I think, had you last time in here. And I remember very vividly the one that we did when I still lived at above the recording studio.
Oh, yeah, dude.
But it's been cool, of course, like, getting to have you throughout your whole journey. Mm-hmm. But also just getting to watch that journey kind of like really come to be.
Yeah, man, it's really just kind of doing its own thing right now. I'm just kind of letting it be the way it's going to be.
So yeah, well, feels dude, good. I think that's part of it. It's such an interesting thing too, because we knew you, you know, when you were still in the military and just like kind of posting.
I tell people
videos.
That all the time, dude.
Sarah, man.
Yeah, she was on it from the jump for sure.
And so just getting to see you come to town and, you know, play your first events.
Yeah,
and
meet
then,
the fellas.
Yeah, meet your crew.
We had a crazy crew, man. Like,
yeah, bro.
I don't know how rare or, like, common that is.
I mean, they call it, like, classes, but you guys had a great one.
It was just a massive amount of people, I feel like.
The thing I think that is different from a lot of that crews and yours is you guys were a little bit more accepting of, like, new members and, longer amount of time of window of, like, when people got to town, wherever they're at, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's a
well,
that's
who was in the crew? I gotta know.
Well, he
I mean,
was just
it was
talking
me.
About
I mean,
Christian.
The first person I ever met in Nashville, I think, was Christian Yancey and Kenny. Because I moved to town, my parents helped me with the U-Haul. We got moved in, and the day that I moved to Nashville, I posted on my story. I'll never forget it. And I just posted like, "Hey, I moved to town," and Brett Bone messaged me off of that story and was like, "Hey, we're writing tomorrow at my buddy's house. Just come over and write." I'd never written before, like with
That's
anybody.
Crazy.
And I walked in the room and it was Christian, Kenny, Sam, and Brett. And that was the first people I met in town.
Gosh. It's easy. It's that easy, folks.
Yeah, dude. I mean,
well, what a
social
great
media just kind of just runs everything now, and it's crazy.
It does, man. I mean, you even hear like, I mean, for example, like Chandler getting the gig with Ernest playing Steel from posting on TikTok, you know, like it's just another way to find talent.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't imagine how scary it was like moving to town back when like social media wasn't a thing. So like you legitimately like didn't know anyone. And so like you would know more than I would. But like for us, like nowadays, it's like you can meet as many people as you want on socials.
Yeah.
And kind of we would just go to Whiskey Jam and then just go over to Red Door afterwards, you know, or go to Tin Roof for Revival, you know, hanging out and meeting folks that way. And there was still Facebook and
good
stuff,
old-fashioned
but it
way,
wasn't
dude.
Like how it is right now. You know, it's like with Instagrams, you can post everywhere, every second. Like they didn't even have stories back then. You know, I didn't even have Instagram. You would post like a photo of like a plate of food you're eating with like some weird filter on it and everything was square cropped and there's no videos.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, absolutely. Well,
and it was very, very photo based back then, right? There wasn't much video content.
Yeah, and now it's rarely photos.
Right.
Now it's all video.
And if it is photos, it's 15 at once, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah.
It's like, here's my week in recap or month in recap
here's
or tour.
A hot dog.
Yeah.
I need to post some photos. I forgot.
I forget about photos, man.
But I think that's one of the, like, we talk about that being a cool part about Nashville is you get to find your crew.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, too, it's like, the successes, like you getting to have Kenny out with you on tour.
Insane, dude.
You know?
It's so cool.
And you got to show him from being out with you what the road looks like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was, I mean, for a minute when we were on my first tour, it was literally just me, Kenny, my brother, and a minivan.
Yeah.
And we did that for about a year and some change and kind of just graduated from there. But yeah, it's insane to see, you know, how busy the whole crew's gotten, you know, like it's not just Kenny, like everybody's like Christian Yancey's a huge rider in town now.
Oh yeah.
And is massively successful, you know, with Josh Ross's stuff. And, it's hard to make time for each other anymore. But I mean, we see each other, you know, out and about every now and then.
Mm-hmm. On Fortnite, maybe.
On Fortnite, dude.
Sometimes.
Yeah, but no, it's just cool to see, you know, where everybody kind of branched off into their own things. Like, there are people playing guitar for other people. There's people songwriting. There's people doing the artist thing.
Yeah.
It's super sick. So.
No, I agree. It's cool to watch. That's one of the blessings of getting to do what we do in town, is like events and stuff.
Yeah.
Is watching people go from being good to being great.
Mm-hmm.
And then watching everybody's journey kind of happen when it happens. Yeah. And the groundswell of finding a team.
I tell people all the time, like, one of my first rounds that I played was with you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the Nothing Fancy one.
Takeover.
And it was me, Ella, Josh, and I can't remember who else.
Garth Brooks, maybe.
maybe Garth point, Brooks. Yeah. But yeah, dude, and like, all those people are killing it right now.
Yeah.
And
it's such an interesting thing.
It's a weird little town we live in.
Yeah.
These are so good.
I know, brother.
I love Surfside.
Dangerous. Man. We just had a Super Light, which are like their Gatorade vodka style drink. Oh, probably even
I drank four of them like in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, your face was
that
real
can't
red.
Be good for good. My health.
No, dude, I mean, it's got electrolytes.
Yeah. Basically.
They're 90 calories each. You know?
Same thing.
This
dude.
Is zero.
but enough about alcohol. Yeah.
Damn.
All right,
fine.
It's like we said, like it's one of those things where that's, as Kurt was saying, coming to town, finding your people mm-hmm. was a little bit different back in the day. Yep. Now you can come into town probably knowing a few people,
right?
You know, not just from having been to town and by chance writing with them. You know, when you got to town, people kind of already knew who you were or some, mm-hmm. and people that didn't often could look back at that and see who you were from your posts and things.
Absolutely.
So
yeah. It was wild back in the day though, dude.
Oh, 100%.
It was wild.
We were
all partiers, dude.
Yeah.
We were out everywhere.
Well, and that's I would say culturally, that's definitely changed, right? Like you don't have people out drinking as many Surfsides as much or, you know, $3 Busch Lights because they're not $3 anymore.
Yeah, facts.
You know, but,
bro, I paid my first beer I bought at Red Door was $2.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm definitely moving to Nashville because I was just visiting. I was like, can I have a Budweiser? And they're like, $2. And I was like, people were smoking inside. I'm like, yeah, I'm moving here.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. But, man, the progression of what you've been doing is super cool, too. So, you know, from the beginning, like when you started releasing music, it's mm-hmm. the balance of rock and the balance of country. And the thing that I think is consistent is, like, that storytelling tone.
Yeah.
So, specifically speaking, like, on the new EP, Colors, mm-hmm. I think you guys, of course, is a little bit more country than some of the stuff that you've had.
For sure.
Still with some elements of like rock or maybe even like a little pop elements. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's a mixture of a lot of different things. And I try not to, like, you know, at least for my creative process, harp on what this kind of sounds like or like what it doesn't or what it needs to sound like.
Yeah.
This EP is really just a accumulation of just songs that I thought were cool.
Yeah.
And it was just what I was writing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's changing so, so much. Like, it just always is.
Yeah.
And I think it's, dude, I honestly think I just get bored really easily.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was doing the rock thing for a while. And not to say that I won't ever, you know, do any more of that. But songwriting was like my first passion, really. And that's what I thought I was going to do when I moved to town, was just write songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, a lot of the songs that are on this EP kind of, the way it sounds helps it lean towards the lyrics and a little less towards how the music sounds behind it.
Yeah.
And that was intentional. Like, I love songwriting. I love lyrics and I wanted it to shine as much as possible. So that's kind of just where we were.
Yeah.
It's not overproduced.
No, no. And I love that about it. I love that, you know, you can listen to the story and you can relate to parts of it or not, but we also got some bangers on there, dude.
Oh,
We got a couple of bangers on there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And sonically, I mean, like we said, it's evolution, mm-hmm. right? Like, and I think you've seen that from, you know, when you were posting acoustic covers all the way through like every project that you've had.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it's constantly molding and figuring out where you're at the time.
Yeah.
The thing that, as you said, and I remember when we talked early on podcast, like you saying about you just wanted to be a songwriter, you know, you thought that's what it was going to be, at least to start.
Yeah.
I think these songs are powerful, right?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think they come from a different place than what the songs before were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because like I said, songwriting is my first, you know, passion, and it kind of just, I started writing songs because I needed to write songs.
Yeah.
And a lot of songs on this project, like you look at Daddy's Eyes and you look at Colors and you look at, you know, songs like that, like that's from a way different place than Excuse the Mess is.
Right.
And it's from a way more introspective place. And those songs just needed to come out, you know. And I felt like, honestly, I started, you know, before I was making the music that was on this project and just, you know, music in general, I was finding myself walking into rooms and feeling like I had to write a certain thing because that was what I had been doing.
Yeah.
And I felt like if I, you know, wasn't the rock guy, then people wouldn't care. And I didn't like that because it like limited me creatively.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to feel like I'm like forced into being a creative in this way and not any way I want. And I think that's what art means, dude. Just like do whatever makes you feel like you need to. If you need to write this, then write it. And if you don't, then don't. But like, that's what this project is, and I'm a huge fan of it. So
me too. It's not like it's so wildly different than what you've done ever before, right? It's just it's the next variation of it.
Absolutely.
Which I think is cool. But like you said, I think the meaningfulness and impactfulness of the lyrics in this are what kind of sets it apart, even from your previous stuff. You know,
yeah, absolutely,
heavy
for sure.
Some of it's definitely heavy.
Yeah, which is great. So well written. I think it's sort of like, you know, the grown-up songwriter thing where it's like you're writing about stuff that's hard to talk about, I feel like, and saying things that people don't say out loud in song, I think is cool.
Yeah, and I think that's what music has always been for me, you know? It's always just been kind of a thing that took me out of a headspace I was in or put me in a headspace I needed to be in for whatever, if I was getting ready to play a football game or if I was trying to forget about something or whatever it was, you know, music has always been that, and I don't ever want to stray away from what brought me where I'm at. So
no, for sure. I love that. And I mean, again, as you go through and write songs, the creative expression is what really makes it feel you.
Yeah.
But also that's the thing that really makes people feel tied to it.
Right. Yeah. So and I think that, like, honestly, after playing so many live shows, and I think we talked about this last time I was here, but one of my favorite things that I didn't know would be one of my favorite things is hearing fan stories.
Yeah.
And just like hearing what they've related my music to in their life. And it gets pretty deep for sure. And I don't know, maybe that was a reason why I felt led to write more honestly than I had been in the past. But the fact that, you know, these people were finding that in my music kind of drove me to do more stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it's cool.
How have these songs, like, I know we just kind of had you close up one of your headlining tours. Mm-hmm. How did these songs impact the crowd? Maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we put out the project last year, Home Sweet Hell, and that was, you know, a big one. That was, so Home Sweet Hell was kind of my first time, I wouldn't say writing from a real place, but like digging that far down.
Yeah.
And bringing something out like that was kind of the first time I had done that. And it's a scary thing, dude. Like, it really is, like, extremely scary to be that honest with not only yourself, but, like, whoever's listening to the music.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the first time that that happened, and the reception of that was just unreal. I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people grew up the same way. And because, you know, not many people talk about it, you would assume a lot of things about people. You know, like, you would look at somebody doing a certain thing or living a certain way and assume that they didn't experience life in a negative way at all, you know? And that was kind of what that song was about, and so that was kind of what drove me, I guess, to, you know, do more stuff like that. Yeah. So
these songs, are they all kind of written in the same kind of general space, or do you have anything that was kind of like from before?
Yeah. I think Colors was the first song that I wrote that kind of like inched me towards what this album is, or this EP is.
Yeah.
We didn't really know that it was going to, because we kind of just released it as a mental health album. Like, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Colors was the first song that kind of told us to do that. And it was just a love song about, you know, my significant other's mental health. And it kind of just made itself that. But, I mean, there's a little bit of everything in it. There's some older songs in it. I know You Being You is a little older. Everything But Okay is a little bit older. But I mean, majority of this stuff, you know, for me as an artist, like, I'm always writing for a project, and I always outright myself in the project. So like we were like taking stuff off the project last minute and putting stuff on it. But yeah, there's a good mixture of old and new stuff on there for cool. sure.
Cause that's always interesting too. It's like you'll get something that you know is special, but it's maybe not the right time or it doesn't fit on the project. You know, it's
absolutely
not the expression that you're trying to get with that.
Yeah.
So it's always a interesting thing to me to hear about like what, you know, like we had this and it came out later. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've dabbled in songwriting a little bit, you know, not a lot and very little, usually just co-writes, you know what I mean? Like the opposite of you starting by yourself and mm-hmm. actually becoming a songwriter.
Yeah.
But sometimes I've like been in a room and like we've gotten a song, I'm like, man, this is awesome. And then like you listen to like a week later and it's just like, damn, this really sucks.
Dude, yeah.
Do you ever get that too?
Every time I write songs, it's either a lot of times I'll write a song and won't think it's that great just because I feel like I'm so like hard on myself, like I'm just such a perfectionist
mm-hmm.
and I'll write something, you know, that I don't particularly think is for a project or whatever, and I'll listen to it, you know, 4 or 5 months after and like find it later and I'm like mm-hmm. oh, that was actually pretty good. Yeah, fresh ears is always dangerous because
yeah.
I mean you can write what you think is a banger and just hate it the next day.
It's so weird. So, right, I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I try to at least live with a song for, you know, at least a few months before we put it out. But
it's kind of like, I feel like I'm looking at a picture too close.
Yeah.
And then the more time I have away from it, the more I can see the photo yeah. from far away.
Well, dude, you're also so emotionally invested in what you're like doing, you know, like for however many hours it takes you to write a song. Like that's like all you're thinking about is that song.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to think it's good when you're done.
Songwriting to me is just magic. Like I'm just not. I don't know how to do it, you know? And I know it's just, Paul McCartney says you got to write 1,000 bad songs before you can get to your, like, first good one. And yeah. so, like, I have maybe written 10 songs, you know? So I'm well on my
you're
way.
You're getting there, dude.
Yeah.
You're getting there.
But I think it's fun to have part of, like, you know, I'm a musician, right? So it's kind of fun to have part of it be, like, unknown to me in a way.
I think
like
that's
it
where
it keeps the magic to it. Does that make sense?
No, mm-hmm. absolutely. It's something that I've talked to people about before. It's just like if you know too much about what you're doing, mm-hmm. then like you're gonna start following the rules. And
so true.
I feel like,
and I think that there's,
and that's with everything. That's with guitar playing. That's yep. with singing. That's with yeah. anything. Like I can't read music at all. I don't know anything about like fifths and like singing harmonies and stuff. Mm-hmm. But like I don't want to. Like I'd rather just. It sound cool.
Mm-hmm. I'm the opposite. I know every scale you could ever dream of. I'm not a songwriter though. So I think I kind of like let that space be sort yeah. of in a way.
Yeah.
But I do have some friends that like you're saying there, they find themselves being more creative because they don't know theory. And so everything is like they're just experimenting and letting their intuition and ear pull them in places.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really cool. But like I said, I went to music school a bunch of times and I'm from sort of that school where I'm like, I want to know how do they, what's that weird chord or like whatever. But yeah. I would jam with some buddies that didn't know anything, you know, technically, but they were great players and they would just play weird stuff. I'm like, that's not even the key or that's not even that. They're like, I don't care. It sounds cool.
Sounds badass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we'd like, you know, get a little stone and get in the garage and play some riffs. And I'm like trying to follow them around. It's like pretty inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I think there's definitely something to be said for that.
I think that's been a big motivator in just my music in general. I mean, even from the jump, like when we wrote Excuse the Mess, we weren't supposed to be doing that. You know, like if you're new in Nashville, you're supposed to be doing
World
what
country or something.
Nashville is doing. Yeah. You know, is yeah. that. And I think my whole kind of career so far has just been built off of doing what I think is a little different.
Yeah.
And I mean, you look at songs that are different that, like, usually wouldn't fit, like, the mold of what's going on. Even, like, the Ella and Riley song, the You Look Like You Love Me song. Like, that song is so different than what was being played, and it's massive,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, I always talk about, like, being overwhelmed by the amount of releases that are coming out right now. You know, there's yeah. so many artists, there's so many songs, and
it's a lot to digest.
Yeah, and part of it is, I don't know if it's like Suno demos or bringing everything to the center, you know, or if it's just, you know, everybody's in the same headspace. But when something speaks to me the most, it's when it breaks outside that mold.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? For sure.
And I think you'll see songs that become culturally impactful usually being that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I worked at a record label in town and artists put out a song and they were like, this isn't a song that we would ever cut. Yeah. But now we would.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it broke the mold and opened up that other lane.
Right.
Remember when Sam Hunt put that song out? He's like, I don't know if you remember me or not. Everyone's like clutching their white pearls,
but
freaking
out. But you're
not
supposed to do that, dude.
Yeah.
And everyone was just like, this is a banger. You know, it was played at like Tin Roof all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of on your point with like how much music is being shoved in people's faces right now, you've got to do something different.
Yeah.
You know, like you can't do the same thing as everybody else. You may be able to do it for a little bit and like have some success, but like nobody's ever going to do Morgan Wallen like Morgan Wallen does Morgan Wallen.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. And so
I think that's a big part of it too. It's, I always say this about like Eric Church. I said, I think Eric Church, when he got into his career, like into the real bulk of his career, that he was significantly more interested in moving the lane 1% to the right or to the left than he was on catching a radio single.
Absolutely. Right?
And sometimes he still caught radio singles. Yeah. Right. But I think that was, if you listen to it sonically, like you could kind of hear that.
Yeah.
And I think the artists that do try to move the needle and do try to constantly develop and do try to like actually break out of whatever is the center or what is happening are the ones that you will be talking about for another generation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's just how I stay interested.
Yeah.
You know, like I can't go into a writing room, you know, 4 times a week and write the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, I just won't be motivated.
Yeah.
And what's the point in doing this crazy career if you're not motivated to do it?
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah, it sounds all glitzy and glamorous, but it is a hard life too.
It's a grind, dude.
Yeah. You're away from your significant other for significant amounts of time. And, you know, emotionally you're putting your heart on your sleeve all the time.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where, and we're in such a weird space in socials where it's like, you're putting your heart on your sleeve.
And gas prices.
Yeah. You're putting your heart on your sleeve, and it's like, is this impacting enough people? Well, like you said, if you're impacting one person or 10 people,
absolutely,
that's more than most people get to do, you know? So that's the part that I think in the end of the days is, like, if you can get out and meet the fans, which you've gotten to tour extensively, you know, get to hear their stories of what your songs mean to them.
Yeah, for sure.
And that in my head is like the thing that keeps people going.
Yeah. And I think that's the one thing that just will never go away, you know, in music. Like you can have the AI and the Suno and whatever it is, but like you will never outdo going and playing shows for people in person and impacting them, you know? And that's just something you can't recreate, I don't think.
Yeah. So. I think that's, we've talked about it pretty extensively, me and Kurt just smoking a cigar, but I think the live experience is like the greatest thing of music.
It is. And yeah, for sure.
The imperfection that happens when you do it live or when you see an artist's ears go out and they have to pull them out and just, you know, just go wrong.
Absolutely.
It's that's the thing that makes it so that you want to go back and see it again.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that makes it so when you leave that show, you want to turn on the EP on the way home and listen to the songs that you just heard.
And come back and see them next time.
100%.
You know?
And that's the key. And I mean, as artistry becomes even more than music, right? I mean, at this point, you're putting songs out to streaming, but that's not really what's driving your revenue.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what's keeping you on
the road.
No,
it's the road stuff. Yeah. It's the merch and the, you know, the ticket sales and stuff like that. You know, that's where I'm making my money. So
that's how it works. You know,
it's got to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, we had a buddy that we were chatting with, and he said, you know, we just saw a spot in life where music and entertainers got a significant share of revenue. But if you go back 100 years, entertainers made no money and they traveled around, you know, they're like through history, performers, entertainers, bards, you know, like were always someone that they just expressed it because they had to.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, absolutely.
You might be the piano player in a saloon.
Yeah.
Like in this book, Lonesome Dove, it's like there's a piano player who like lives in this brothel and just plays piano at the bottom. That's like his job.
Fire.
Yeah. Fire. I mean, but relatively speaking to building railroads, probably pretty fire. You know? But I think that's one of the cool things about where we're at right now, too, as a society, is you have the ability to get a song that breaks the mold
and
out to people.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like, you know, a while back, like, it was a lot more gatekept on what you could do and couldn't do.
Yeah.
You know, if you weren't doing what a radio song sounded like, then you weren't going to get played on the radio.
Right.
You know? And today I feel like, you know, you have a song that's streaming well enough, they'll play it.
Absolutely.
You know, and the streams come from somebody that likes the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, or you don't even need radio, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there's significant.
But radio should play Austin Stone. But
yeah, I was gonna say, you said it, I didn't, dude. Yeah. Please play my songs on the radio.
Yeah. Well, there's plenty of ways to do it, right? The cool thing about country music still is that radio is a very valuable part of it.
Yeah, it is for sure. I just think it's like they're going about it a different way nowadays.
For sure.
It's still helping for sure. But the way they pick songs that go radio and have success at radio are different.
Yeah.
You know, it comes from the people liking the song first.
Mm-hmm.
And radio just kind of puts the icing on the cake.
Yeah. I remember I used to have that radio show back in Pittsburgh and was talking to the program director. And he was talking about consumption charts. And I was like, what's a consumption chart? You know, I'm back in Pittsburgh. I've never been in Nashville. Like, and he's like, well, that's actually how much people are listening to it. Not just from the radio, not just from YouTube, but everything rolled up. And he's like, have you heard of Old Town Road? So this was like right when that was popping. And they're like, this song's consumption's crazy. But it's not because the song is this or that. He's like, they're using it on TikTok. With at that time it was Red Dead Redemption clips with
was
Old Town
really?
Road over it. Yeah, like that's part of what popped that song.
That's
was
I
they were
no
like
idea.
Putting
yeah,
video
that.
Clips of Red Dead Redemption and putting Old Town Road over it.
What the hell?
Yeah. So it's like he's like, this is where it's coming from, but this is impacting the population, and this is considered a country song. This is a country song. This is one of the most consumed country songs at that time.
Yeah.
Right. So just the avenues that you have now to have something go, and realistically, like how it's impactful is not the most important part now. The fact of the matter is how impactful it is once it's impactful. And that doesn't make an exact sense.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
As long as it gets to the end.
Yeah.
You know? Very Machiavellian sort of
as
take
long as
on
it
music
gets
business.
There.
Yeah.
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 For sure.
So it doesn't matter if it blew up on TikTok or if no one on TikTok likes it and it, on X, it got to people. You know, there's always different platforms for people to get it.
For
and
sure.
Radio is still an important one, specifically in country music.
Yeah. It all helps.
Yeah.
For sure. But
so we know you got some cool tour stuff coming up, festivals we're going to be seeing you out at.
Yeah, dude. We're playing festivals right now. This is kind of, you know, festival season for everybody.
Yeah.
So
rocking the country, rocking the
south.
Rocking all the places.
All the rocks.
Rocking the suburbs.
And then CMA Fest, too. We were just chatting before you got here.
Yeah.
You got a good slot for CMA Fest.
Yeah, dude. CMA Fest is fun. It's a little. So last year was like a grind for us. Like we went from playing this show straight. It was like playing a Broadway gig. Like we were going from this, like
just
loading
running.
Out of that bar, going to this bar, going to that bar. I think we played like, I want to say like 7 shows.
And it's like 1,000 degrees outside.
Yeah, dude. And you also don't get paid to do it.
Around.
Yeah.
So,
but
yeah, this year's really cool. We're doing, I think, 3 or 4 really good ones.
Sick.
So we're doing like the XM thing, and then Chevy Vibes.
Yeah.
So I've never played that stage.
Dude,
we played Reverb
really
my
cool.
first year, and then we played Riverfront the last 2. So
Vibe stage is cool, and you're we were talking that you have like a 5 p.m. slot, which is like a great slot.
Yeah. It's gonna be fun.
Yeah, it's I always love CMA Fest, and we'd been out of town for a few years on it. I'm not sure if I'm gonna. I might be in town for this one. We'll see, but. For like the first time in a while, but we're usually at a tailgate in Tallboys, but they canceled the Iowa show, so that was what was always.
We usually have a show somewhere the next day,
mm-hmm.
so like we're usually packing up as soon as we're finishing CMA Fest and leaving.
Rolling,
I think
out.
We've had bus call like the last 2 years on CMA Fest, so I think this year we're chilling.
Oh, that's great. That'll be a good change of pace for you.
Yeah, I might go fight the crowd, dude. I don't know.
Yeah, head out to something.
Yeah, dude,
just go to Tootsie's and grab a beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, something slight.
Yeah. But it's like, we love festivals. I mean, of course, like That's part of what made Raise Rowdy Raise Rowdy. You know, is festivals.
Absolutely.
So we're
and also festivals is just, I feel like, where kind of a lot of artists get to see each other.
Yeah.
You know, and it's kind of just a big powwow.
Mm-hmm.
And I love playing outside when it's not too hot.
Yeah, or too.
I got too roasted this past week.
I see you're red, bro.
Crap, bro. We were in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Where at?
St. Pete.
Okay.
Yeah, so
Florida sun will get you.
And Allie's from there, so we played the show and hung out the whole weekend there.
Oh, that's great. Oh,
fun, man.
This is 30 minutes of being on the beach, bro. It was bad.
Crazy.
I don't know what got into me.
Sun.
Sun got into me.
Radiation, dude.
We were down in Texas, and it was overcast, and I didn't put any sunscreen on, and this was a month ago. Oh, I got so burnt.
Sneak up on you.
Yeah. I was like, all right. I went and bought, as soon as I got home, I went and bought more sunscreen. I'm like, all right, spray sunscreen and rub on sunscreen.
Yeah.
But if someone like hasn't seen your guys' live show, what would you say to them now?
I would say it's going to be changing a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, the last few years it's been just extremely high energy, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what I love about the rock music. And that's, I think we've talked about this before. Like,
yeah.
That's what made me fall in love with rock, was just like how cool the live show aspect of it is.
Yeah.
And so it's been that the last, you know, few years, but with the new music and like me wanting to tell more of a story, it's just finding, you know, how to fit the set together now.
Yeah.
And when I first started, like I was trying to fill out a set. Now it's like, what do you cut? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many good ones that we've been playing for years now that like are going to have to make it on the set somehow.
Yeah.
So it's just figuring out how to, you know, piece it together, but still, you know, a lot of the same stuff, but just a little added depth to it.
I love that too. And I think these songs specifically are songs that you can talk to.
Yeah.
Right. And explain.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the things, like we talk about Nashville, and one of the powers of Nashville is getting to hear the stories behind the songs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that'll be super impactful.
Yeah.
As you know, play this stuff that lives a little bit closer to the heart.
Yeah.
Getting to do that a little more.
Yeah, dude.
Love it.
We got to keep the high tempo stuff, though.
For sure.
Like we're going to keep playing Excuse the Mess as long as I live, probably.
Yeah.
And that's always a banger, so.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, you got to do that.
Yeah, dude.
But I think that's part of it, is the balance. Like, we were chatting earlier about Ashley McBride,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's one of the things that she does extremely well. Like, she will take you to the highest of highs, and so we'll put
just
you in the
drop
palm
you
of
off
her
in
hand.
A cliff, dude.
Yeah,
totally.
And throw you in the palm of her hand, and then she guides you exactly where she wants you to go.
Yeah.
In my head, that's one of the things that like an entertainer can really do, is like have the Excuse Your Mess and like get the entire crowd's blood pressure up, and then mix that in with something that makes them
weep.
Yeah,
dude.
I think
Hardy's
like,
really good at that.
Same, I agree.
He's so good at that.
And Jelly too.
Yeah,
you know, like Jelly
takes you to church.
Yeah,
dude, his like Bottomland bit in his set now is insane, bro.
I haven't seen Hardy in a while.
Dude, people forget how well he can sing.
Yeah.
Like, that dude can sing his ass off,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes it's just overshadowed by like the crazy rock music he's playing. But
he's
dude's
such a great
writer
too.
Yeah, and he's got some vocals on him for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
It's cool too. I think Hardy's one of those guys that has so much depth in what he does.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyone else in the scene that you're like stoked on musically or that you've been listening to?
Man, I'm a huge Stephen Wilson Jr. fan.
Yeah.
Same.
His entire, everything he does is great. I'm trying to think. I've been listening to a lot of Noah Kahan recently, which is pretty much country. It's country.
Yeah. Adjacent.
But yeah, just a lot of the songwritery stuff, man. Like, I've just been a fan of, you know, lyric recently, and I don't know, I feel like I had a little bit of a rebellious mindset when I first came on the scene, of just like, I'm gonna do the rock music and like fuck what everybody else thinks, dude.
Yeah.
And it's cool to dial it back and do something, you know, a little more internal, I guess.
Well, we know that you were literally writing today, and this record just came out. Do you think the next kind of thing is gonna be go back to rocking a little bit more, or keep it in the, or are you just still kind of riding and see what falls out?
To be honest with you, I have no idea.
Yeah. Cool.
I
love
it. No idea. Maybe.
Maybe.
See what comes.
If it happens that day.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I just don't want to walk into a room assuming that I know what I'm going to write today.
Yeah.
I love walking into a room and just being like, dude, you got that badass guitar riff? Let's write to that. Mm-hmm. Or like, hey, you got this piano ballad thing going? Let's do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I just feel like, I don't know, I've limited myself to what I could do if I push myself to do something that I don't really want to do. So I don't know, dude. Maybe rock, maybe not.
That's cool.
But
little jazz.
Little jazz, dude. A little R&B. We dropped an R&B song this year.
Yeah.
The Let Me Love You cover.
Mm-hmm.
That was way different. People love that.
I'm sure that crushes in a live set if you play it, too.
That's why we put it out. We've been covering it for about a year and a half, and like people just love that song. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, I like singing it. Let's just put it out.
I love that.
Yeah.
Also, congrats on the engagement, by the way.
Thank you, dude.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We've known you guys together almost as long as we've known you in town. So
I mean, it's pretty much been
the
entirety of me being in town. I moved in 2022 in May. We met in like October of 22. Mm-hmm. So she's got to watch everything. Mm-hmm. She's been kind of there through all of everything happening. So it was time, dude.
Yeah, she's a good girl.
It was time. And we're both just progressively getting more busy. So she's a wardrobe stylist,
mm-hmm.
and she's doing big things. Our house is flooded with clothes 24/7, bro. She's going to have to get another house for that shit.
A she shed out in the back.
A she shed. Yeah. Dude, absolutely.
With all the clothes.
I've had like when I've done photo shoots, like when I used to shoot more, you have artists come in and they bring their stylist. And there's a couple times where I'm like photographing someone and I go to like fix their shirt or whatever. And then the stylist will run in and like, swap my hand out of the way and like do it. You know what I mean? Like, sorry.
Yeah, dude.
Now, I always make jokes like maybe I could use some. I know you got those Levi deals or Wrangler or whatever. And
she'll
like,
hook you up, bro.
Yeah.
She'll hook you up.
There you go.
Crazy.
Get them through threads, dude. That's cool.
Yeah. The proposal was crazy.
Tell us about it.
Dude, it was. I didn't know if I was going to have the ring in time. So we went and ring shopped and like she, you know, we figured out what she wanted. And I didn't know it was going to be in the video until maybe a month.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about it. How did I forget about this? This is so sick.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. I didn't know it was going to be in the video until maybe, I mean, it's probably 2-3 weeks out because I'm a procrastinator, and I didn't buy the ring until last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the ring shop, and I was like, hey, I just had this idea to, like, propose in a music video that I'm putting out. Can I have this ring by this point? And she was like, probably not. And it was like 3 weeks. And I mean, it was a custom ring. So, like, they had to make it.
Yeah.
And I got it, I think, a week before.
Uh-huh.
And I've never been more nervous in my life for anything, dude. The hardest part was like, I had the ring and we filmed the entire video all day. So, we got there at 9 o'clock, whatever time it was. And I didn't propose until I think it was 5. Mm-hmm. And said, so, I'm stressing out this entire time, bro.
I'm stressed out hearing the story.
Yeah, dude. I was stressed out the whole time. It ended up going as good as it could have went. I think I got down on one knee and I got the mic. They mic'd me up for the proposal. So like I had a mic on me.
Mm-hmm.
And the audio from that obviously didn't make it into the video because I botched the whole thing, dude. I think I got down on one knee and then I said something and then I like blacked out and started crying. And then I don't know what else happened.
Oh, I love it.
But yeah, it was beautiful, man. It was awesome. And it was kind of just a song that I'd been planning on writing for a while and just hadn't done it yet and waited for the right people to write it with. So, and that's kind of just been a big thing in our relationship is just both of our mental health. It's just kind of always been like top of the spear. And, you know, she comes from not the greatest background and neither do I. So, it was a sweet love song. And also a love song that is not like a normal one, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to do because I felt like I had tried to write love songs in the past and it just came off too cheesy or like I was trying too hard to say something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how that song happened, so.
Love it.
Yeah, dude. It was awesome.
That's incredible. And it's just forever immortalized.
Yeah, dude. And that was the thing is like I was scared because she's always told me that she didn't want, you know, a ton of people around. Like, she kind of didn't want it to be just kind of intimate and, like, me and her, which there were 10 cameras in front of us. But, yeah, she kind of said that. And, like, she also said that, you know, she wanted it to be filmed. So, I was like, it makes sense. Yeah. Do it in the video.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You didn't do it at the Knicks game at the NBA Finals or whatever, so.
Yeah, dude, no. And, her nails were going to be done anyway because she was in the video. She was already supposed to be in it.
Had the wardrobe dialed.
Oh, yeah. Had the wardrobe dialed. And, dude, me and her best friend had it planned. Like, me and her had been talking and, like, trying to figure out how we were going to get her nails done. Because I feel like that's always the huge thing with, like, girls is, like, make sure my nails are done.
Mm-hmm.
And we had gotten to a point where like she was taking her to get her nails done like every month or so. So like, you know, whenever it did happen, yeah. it was going to be good. And dude, the night before the video, she walks in and she's like, yeah, I think I'm going to just take these nails off and like not have nails done for the video. And I fully melted down, dude. I was like, oh God. I was like, maybe they might be doing like close ups of your hands or anything or something like that. I don't know. And I was freaking out, dude. So she went and got them done that more like that. Or it was the day before. So she told me that 2 days before the video.
Yeah.
And did just a full meltdown.
You're like, what do I do?
Yeah. I was like, this is the one thing she wanted for the proposal.
Yeah.
She's like, I might take my rings or my nails off. And you just start crying.
Yeah, dude.
She's literally. Like, what the fuck is wrong with
literally,
you?
Literally, dude. But it worked out. So it was awesome. Great. Yeah, man.
It's great to see your guys' love story, Boston, too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. She's been through me trying to figure it all out and, you know, like, when I was a party animal and all that stuff, she kind of just stuck around, and we're great now. So,
love it.
It's good. It's good.
Part growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Part yeah. growing up.
Growing old together.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful, man.
Yeah, dude.
Well, what else you got going on that we need to cover?
Dude, EP's out.
EP's out.
EP's out.
Colors. We're go playing, stream it.
We're playing festivals. We'll probably do a tour in the fall.
Yeah.
Like we usually do. And yeah, we're already getting in the studio next week or so to put out more stuff. So
love it.
Always new songs.
Hey, that's the way it works. And
gotta
honestly,
keep up, dude.
Yeah. And that's getting the expression out there too.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things we talk about too. It's like, you never know what song's going to mean the most to the people.
You really don't. I've tried to guess it and it just never ends up being that.
Yeah.
You know, when I posted Excuse the Mess, like we wrote the song that day and I posted it like any other song.
Yeah. I remember you scrambling to get a producer. How yeah. do I get this out? Yeah. What the hell's a producer, dude?
Yeah, dude, I didn't have a pre-save or anything, bro. And yeah. like it was supposed to go to Bailey originally, that mm-hmm. song. He had it on hold, and then I called and took it back and didn't tell anyone. I was talking to Zeb at the time, so like he was like kind of my point in like yeah. the industry.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to him about it, and he was like, yeah, let him cut it. Like, what do you think? What are you thinking? Like, take the cut as a songwriter and you'll yeah. you know, get a publishing deal or whatever. And when I called him and took it back, and I had the whole song recorded and everything and didn't tell him about it. And I started teasing it, and he's like, yo, what are you doing? And he helped me with the pre-save and everything like that. So, yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You just got to do whatever you want to do.
Man, and that's crazy. Usually if you lead with your heart, it ends up working out.
Yeah.
I'd say it did.
For sure.
So.
Mm-hmm.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
doubt.
We're having fun.
No, dude, shit.
That's dude. It. We're having a good time.
Yeah.
We're having a good time.
Well, brother, thanks so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having
popping
me,
popping over.
Always.
It's always a blessing to get caught up. I know we see each other every once in a while here and there, but.
Few and far between these days.
Yeah.
Man.
So it's good to get a little bit of time with you, man.
Yeah,
we
absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm going to send you the acoustic version that we did, Excuse the Mess, with Dobro on it that Charlie recorded.
Yeah.
Did that ever get posted?
Yeah, yeah.
I have it, and I'll text it to you. I listened to it probably a few months ago for some reason. And
it's
good. It yeah. rips, dude. It fucking rips. And we're in front of the green screen or whatever. Nick's in a hot dog costume or something.
Yeah, you wear a hot
checks
dog?
Out. There's something I've there. We got to repost that.
Yeah, I'll show you the photo too. Anyway, thanks for coming on, brother. We
yeah,
appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, we'll see you the next time.
See y'all
later,
all right,
dude.
Guys. Thanks for listening, and make sure you stream Colors. Cheers.